He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is John Katzimatidis, WABC, at the 5 o'clock show today with Livia Serrani and Governor David Paterson. And we're here to give you all the news that's going on. And most important thing, thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
TGIF.
And it's supposed to be hot this weekend, so I am looking forward to getting some sun. Hopefully you'll be by the beach.
You know, we're going to have, by the end of the week, it's going to be the middle of August. The summer is almost gone.
I can't believe it. I can't believe how fast. And there's still so much news. Usually this summer, there's less news. And every day, there seems to be like a new breaking story.
And I understand we have with us Newt Gingrich. He's been away. He's been enjoying Rome, and he's back. Mr. Speaker?
Oh, it's great talking to you.
Welcome back. We missed you. You were out. You were in Rome enjoying the sun, enjoying the Vatican. Tell us, how was it? How is Italy right now?
Well, I think the Italians are still deeply affected by the problems with travel. They get about 14% of their entire economy is from tourism, and it's just been shattered for the last year and a half. So lots of small businesses on the verge of bankruptcy, a lot of small restaurants that went under, hotels that have been shuttered for, you know, a year and a half, beginning to reopen, very worried that there might be another shutdown in the fall, very angry about some of the government policies, Not as bad as, say, France, where there have been riots against the government, but still real concerns. But they love Americans. Calista and I had a great time. She'd, of course, been there for 3.5 years as the ambassador of the Vatican. So we were back visiting old friends and, you know, seeing what was going on and having a chance to really talk with people. Italy, as you know, and Italy is one of those places where between the weather and the food and the people, it's just a remarkable experience. And so we were being reminded how fortunate we had been to be in Italy. But it's good to be home. We're doing a lot of work. I just did a newsletter today asking a really simple question. When you watch all of these thousands of people illegally crossing the border, where are they going? Apparently the Biden administration will not tell us where they're sending all of the illegal immigrants.
They're sending them where they need votes.
Well, I think that's what they're doing. I think they owe it to the American people. When you have people coming over who have not been tested for COVID, who in many cases have not been checked for a criminal record, to just put them on a Greyhound and say good luck strikes me as really totally irresponsible and a threat to the country. And I think that this is an issue that the members of the House and Senate ought to be asking, so who's coming to my district and who's going to pay for it? It's a real problem.
Well, the last time, 4 years ago, during President Obama's thing, they sent a lot of the San Salvador, the MS-13 people, to Long Island. And it took Long Island a long time to clean out all the MS-13 gangs.
And in the process, there were some very brutal killings. Yeah, I remember several cases of people who had been tortured to death. And I mean, MS-13 is a really bad group. And of course, when you start letting thousands of people across the border, one way to think of this is compare it to a city. In July, under the Biden system, we added Birmingham in illegal immigrants to Birmingham, Alabama, 201,000 people. Where did they go? You know, how many of them were criminals? How many of them had COVID? In McAllen, Texas, where a lot of them go early on, their estimate was that 16% of the people coming across the border had COVID. Now, that's based on who was actually in McAllen. So they'd had about 7,000, I think. come to their relatively small town.
I think we all believe in immigration, but there's got to be some checks and balances. You got to make sure you don't bring in people that are gangsters, people that are criminals, people that are going to harm American citizens. And when Ellis Island was open, they used to test them for all kinds of diseases. So, yes, we are pro-immigration, but it can't be the way they're doing it. It's just horrible.
Well, and that's exactly right. I mean, Calista and I went to Ellis Island one time to look at her grandmother's entry point because her grandmother had come over from Poland about 1911, I think. You know, and all the records were right there. And it was an orderly process. We accepted an amazing number of people from all over the world. But they came through. They were checked to make sure they were healthy. They filled out forms. It was a regular process. What we're watching every night on the border because of the Biden policies is a true disaster, and it's bad for the immigrants. You have a lot of these little kids. You got 10, 12-year-olds being sent, you know, to the United States with no adult supervision. You don't know how many of them are going to end up in sexual trafficking or other kinds of human trafficking. It's really not a good environment. And the Biden administration seems to be committed to actually increasing on a regular basis the number of immigrants. So that's what I wrote on that in my newsletter at Gingrich 360 today, because and it's just entitled, you know, where are they going? You know, it's not a complicated question.
Mr. Speaker, in the last 7 months of policies that the Biden administration has come up with, what do you think made you the most angry or hurt our country the most?
That is a really good question. I think what has made me the angriest actually was not Biden, but Pelosi. As a former Speaker of the House, I think that the U.S. House is very, very, very important. And I think that it is the center of freedom, not the presidency, which is just a kingship, but the U.S. House is built on the tradition of the British House of Commons. And watching her become a dictator, watching her break every single rule, watching her run things entirely on her own, I think is the most destructive thing I've seen by any American politician in a very, very long time. And I think that we will see for years from now that problem. And, of course, it's carried over to Biden, who is told by the U.S. Supreme Court that he cannot, by executive order, stop landlords from collecting the rent, decides he'll just go ahead and violate the Constitution, which is, you know, when the Supreme Court has ruled, if a president goes directly at that ruling, he is clearly violating the Constitution. And you have to wonder, I mean, there's no respect for the rule of law at the border. There's no respect for the rule of law when it gets involved in an issue that the left wing cares about. And, of course, now, although we already have inflation and we already see gasoline prices going up, food prices going up, housing prices going up, car prices going up, they're going to try to pass these two gigantic bills that are going to put even more pressure on the economy. And I think by next year we could easily be in a Jimmy Carter-style inflation with all of the side effects that means in terms of crippling people's standard of living and slowing the economy down and putting it into what they used to call stagflation, where you have stagnation on the job side and inflation on the value of money side. Larry Summers, the former Democratic Secretary of the Treasury, you know, famous economist, president of Harvard at one time, you know, he's been saying very publicly, this is going to be a disaster if you keep spending all this money. And they just ignore them. I mean, you know, as long as they pay off their allies, they don't seem to care what happens to the country.
And this new system that it's mind-boggling how he thinks he can change America into electric cars, 50% of them by 2030. It's an impossibility.
Well, it's not only an impossibility. If somebody sits down and says, if you have that many electric cars, how much electricity do you need? How big an investment in the system does that take? What kind of electricity? You're not going to get all that out of solar and out of wind. So you're going to have to go either to nuclear, where there are great breakthroughs in small nuclear facilities, and you could go that way. although the left will do everything they can to stop it. Otherwise, you're going to go to coal. And by the way, there was an article yesterday that the Chinese, having welcomed us back into the Paris Accord on the climate, the Chinese have massively increased their shipments of coal and are bringing in massive amounts of coal to China because it is the least expensive way to create electricity. By contrast, California could end up with the drought that they're in as their reservoirs keep falling. They could end up not being able to produce enough hydropower and really end up, as the state, which has pushed very hard to have electric vehicles, not being able to provide the electricity for the electric vehicles, at which point, of course, the electric vehicle can't move.
Speaker Gingrich, this is Lydia Serrano. I wanted to play for you a little bit, Nancy, Speaker Pelosi, what she said a short time ago regarding the eviction moratorium and just this kind of inflammatory rhetoric and how they seem to change the narrative and are forgetting about the middle class completely. Take a listen.
Tuesday was a great day of relief for families facing imminent eviction. Could you just imagine families on the streets, baby cribs, personal belongings on the street while people had to find another place to live?
Your reaction, Speaker Gingrich.
Well, first of all, we have passed a whole series of payments to individuals over the last year, which is designed to help them. We also have a shortage of people showing up for work, which would be one way to avoid eviction. I mean, Nancy Pelosi lives in a city, by the way, that has thousands and thousands of people living in the streets.
Exactly.
And, you know, the whole notion of her in her very expensive home worrying about the rest of us, I think, is a farce. But what you have to remember is they have no idea how the system works. Well, if you say to all the landlords in the country, you cannot collect your rent, and you're a middle-class landlord, let's say you have one or two houses you've been renting out, and you've worked for 20 years to save up to buy those two houses. Well, the bank's not going to, they don't provide a moratorium on the bank repossessing the landlord.
Well, how about the taxes? There's no moratorium on the taxes either.
That's right. So the government comes in and says, you can't collect any rent. We want our taxes. The bank wants their mortgage. And tough break if we bankrupt you. Well, what that's going to do, of course, is send a signal that nobody should go into providing housing. I mean, so they're creating, their policies are such that they continually create another crisis, just as canceling the Keystone Pipeline increases the pressure on the United States in terms of gas and oil. And I don't think these guys can think straight. I don't think they have any idea what they're doing. And I think they have a series of ideas. Ronald Reagan used to say, it isn't what they don't know that scares me. It's what they know that isn't true. And I think that's exactly the nature of the Biden administration and of Nancy Pelosi and of AOC and of this entire left-wing movement that I think their model of the world simply will not work.
Well, This is David Patterson. I wanted to thank you for your service in another area, the attention that you have paid to the Earth, Moon, Mars sort of triangle and how China is using outer space basically to militarize themselves and that this would further their capacity to disable our nuclear warheads by firing at our satellites and all the work you've done there along with some of your team. I've actually gotten to know them, and they have really educated me beyond anything I ever knew about China and its ultimate destination if no one stops them.
Well, David, thank you. I'm very flattered, and I'm very grateful for your comments. We all have to wake up and understand that Xi Jinping, the leader of the Chinese dictatorship, is a very serious man. He has a very methodical program. He talks about it very publicly. And his goal is to completely replace the United States by 2040 as the most powerful country in the world. And they're working at it every single day. And our Pentagon, I'm actually working on a paper right now at Gingrich 360 on the fact that we have all sorts of very senior officers, 3- and 4-star generals and admirals, who have said, that in virtually every war game we lose, and yet the Pentagon doesn't change. And I think this is a real crisis for America. You got these big, cumbersome bureaucracies surrounded by big, cumbersome private corporations who have greater strength as lobbyists than they do as engineers. And the result is that we are in real danger. And then you have school systems like the one in Baltimore City, in which about half of the students are unable to pass any exam. I just saw a story this evening that in Newark, only 9% of the students could pass the state exam in mathematics. 9%.
Wow.
Well, you know, you're not going to compete with China if you insist on paying off the teachers' unions to not teach.
Speaker Newt Gingrich, thank you so much for coming on, and welcome back to your vacation. We need you here in America, and thank you for telling the American people what goes on. And God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you, and it's great to be with you as always. Take care.
Let's go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to come back with Larry Kudlow, I believe.
What it boils down to is the new morality, doesn't it? A whole new sense of values. The kids see it on television, in magazines, even hear it from the pulpit. God is dead. Drug addiction is mind-expanding. Promiscuity is glamorous.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
We're back. John Katsimatidis here, number one station, WABC Radio. And with us today is Larry Kudlow. And he's going to tell us the markets are all-time highs. Good evening, Larry. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm fine, thanks.
Now, I've seen you on your Fox Business show today, and you were all up and down on the new electric cars. I mean, how can we possibly have electric cars 50% of for the country by 2030?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. And look, I'm not opposed to electric cars. What I am opposed to is the government paying for electric cars and everything that goes with it, the charging stations, giving huge subsidies. If the car is made, let's see if we get this right. If the car is made in a union shop and if the car is made in America, then they're going to give you a $7,500 tax credit to buy the car. This is reminiscent of the Obama cash for clunkers. The government wants to change the electricity grid. The government wants to tax cars, combustion engines. They want a 50 mile per gallon CAFE fuel standard, which is actually 54 miles a gallon. Donald Trump had brought it down to 40 miles a gallon. The car company said they liked that, but then they got cold feet and decided to go with California and the Green New Deal. That's where Biden is coming. In other words, my point, John, is electric vehicles, fine. You want to have battery driven, that's fine. The trouble is I don't want government to pay for it. And furthermore, we don't have the resources. I mean, I had Mark Mills on from the Manhattan Institute. We don't have the rare earths. We don't have the cobalt. We don't have the lithium. We don't have the copper. Biden is shutting mines down, okay? And that includes natural gas, oil, and coal. He's shutting our resources down. So any efforts we make to move towards electric automobiles and or an electricity grid, by staying away from natural gas, will come from China, okay? It will come from China because China has roughly 95% of the rare earths minerals market necessary to go, into net free emissions type stuff. We could do it. We have the resources under the ground. The administration won't let us do the mining. There's no planning here. There's no investing going on there. That's the crazy part of this story.
So are we rewarding China?
Yes, we are. We are rewarding China. Because, look, China has 45, 50% of the polysilicon market. That's what you use for the solar panels. And China has about 95% of the operating, producing mines for rare earths, which are necessary for batteries. Okay? So, yes, we are rewarding China. Look, let me just say, I am not opposed to electric cars or battery-driven cars or this or that, okay? I am opposed to the U.S. government doing it as a central planning measure, and I think that we should let 1,000 flowers bloom. This is what I've never understood, John. The Green New Deal utopians want to have it their way. They want to end all fossil fuels and somehow go to sort of net zero emissions. Why not play to our strength in America? We have tremendous natural gas, which has brought carbon emissions down 25% since the year 2005, okay, the fracking miracle. We have oil. We have clean burning coal. That's improving all the time. Why not have an all-of-the-above policy instead of jamming down this Green New Deal policy for which we are not prepared? And, John, it's going to cost consumers and motorists a fortune. Prices and costs are going to skyrocket.
That's it's mind-boggling how everything seems to go in that direction. I mean, whether we're helping Russia with their pipeline, whether we're helping yes. China with their
energy
and batteries. Mm-hmm. And wait a second, how about we pull out of Afghanistan and all of a sudden China is going to move in and that's where all the minerals are to build the batteries?
Oh, God.
Well, that's another risk. I agree with that. You know, all of this Green New Deal stuff has tremendous national security and military security implications because we are strengthening our enemies. We are not strengthening America first. So I don't think this has been well thought out. Listen, John, the other part of the story is good. You had over 1 million new jobs created in each of the last 2 months with revisions. We have a jobs boom. We have an economic boom. We have too much inflation. We don't need another $5 trillion spending package, which is going to damage inflation even more, probably. We don't need $3 trillion plus in new taxes. We're not going to tax our way into prosperity. You know, again, I say this for the millionth time. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The economy is booming right now. It's time for the Fed probably to taper down some of their stimulus. They're already doing it in the open market with these reverse repos. But the story is good. We don't need a lot of central planning, statist capitalism, corporate subsidies. You know, let the market flourish. Let free enterprise flourish. And if you want to build batteries, fine. Open the door to mining. Mining is very important, and America has the resources underneath the ground. And, you know, it's like fracking. I mean, you know the oil business, the energy business. The fracking miracle made the air cleaner and provided, you know, cheap, affordable, accessible power. That should be our mantra.
This is David Patterson here. I actually was going to approve fracking, and someone who was about to come into office after me asked me if I would leave it and let him do it. And he actually turned around and rejected it.
Right.
I wonder who that was.
Mm.
I sort of remember that episode, David. And that's a tragedy because if with all the health security waived, health regulations were okay. They must have gone through it 3 or 4 times in New York State, right? All they had to do is build that pipeline, and we would have had a lot more cheap, easily available, resilient, you know, reliable energy and electricity.
Larry, our Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC, which was the approving agency, I was sure was going to vote fracking down. They approved it. I mean, yeah. Some rather progressive Democrats, when they looked at the facts, they saw that it worked for the state and it was safe. And so I was going to do it.
So who's, David, you were governor at that time.
I was governor at the time.
Who was paying to make sure it doesn't happen?
The environmental groups didn't want it to happen. But
and
I
they
took
have
some,
that much lobbying money
well,
to
they,
make it not
oh,
happen?
Oh, listen, they were showing up at events that I was at. I thought I was under environmental, attack at the time. But I had decided, I delayed it for a year because it upset so many people. We reexamined it. We decided we were going to do it in July of 2010. And the next administration said, do us a favor, wait and let us do it. And the next thing you know, they were shutting down one of the facilities.
Now, Larry Kudlow, if they want 50% of the cars to be electric and they don't want nuclear energy, and they don't want coal energy, and they don't want fossil fuel energy, how do you create the electricity to power up the cars?
Well, that's a heck of a good question. I mean, that's a fabulous question. I mean, look, to develop this battery-powered process is, even if you started opening up mines and developing rare earths to go into the batteries. I mean, lithium is very important here. We don't have any. So we're going to have to develop it or else we're just going to buy
it. The lithium is in Afghanistan and we just pulled out.
Well, there you go. So it's going to cost a fortune. I mean, these electric cars are already very expensive. We know that from Tesla. Now, the other companies are going to, they're going to fancy them up a little bit. BMW is going to come out, Mercedes, and all going to have electric cars, but it's going to be very, very expensive, and maintaining it is expensive. The battery power, the government's going to pay for the what I call the electric gas stations, the rechargers. By the way, in the early days, the oil companies paid for their own gas stations. But in any case, the federal government now wants to take that over. This guy Buttigieg is going to be from Transportation Department, is going to be in charge of everything. Talk about central planning. But it will be expensive. It will be expensive to maintain these electric cars, and it will also be expensive to build these electric cars. And it's the middle class and it's the lower middle class that's going to suffer the most because their electric power will be more expensive in their homes and in their businesses, and their automobiles will be more expensive. And that's very unfortunate because, Trump left us with cheap and easily available supplies of energy.
$2 a gallon gasoline.
Yeah, that's where we're headed for, undoubtedly. It's really too bad. But again, the security part, the national security part, we're just helping China, okay? Or Russia. That is not good. We're helping, the Congo. I mean, what good is that? These are countries with terrible human rights stories, no freedom, no democracy. Why do we want to do that? That's what I want to ask.
Larry Kudlow.
All ideological reasons.
Larry Kudlow, thank you for everything you've done for our country and continue to speak out for our country. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we have some surprises for you. We have some people from the Sinatra family here in New York, and they're going to be talking about bringing back the Rat Pack.
John Katzenmatidis.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes.
And we're back. It's Friday. And with us in the studio is Charles Pignoli with the Sinatra family. And on the air, who do we have?
The one
the
and
vice
only.
Chairman of the board. We have Joe Piscopo. Where is Joe? Joe, you're stuck in traffic. You were supposed to be here.
I know. I'm so sorry there, John. You know what?
Are you going to be late for dinner?
No. That I'm not going to be late for. I'm never late for dinner. You know that. Not with you. But I was down with my mom, and now I speak to you with a big sign in front of me that says Holland Tunnel. And so I'm working my way back to you, babe. You know, what can I tell you?
Well, tell us all about what's been going on with you the last few days.
You know what? It's been great. We've been, we take this Sundays with Sinatra that we do, John, that you and you had the idea. You said, why don't you jump on the air? We'll do a tribute to Frank Sinatra on Sunday night. And then it just caught fire. And the first thing I did before I went on the air, as you know, I talked to you and Margo. I said, I got to talk to Charlie Pignon, my buddy, because Charlie's the CEO of Sinatra Enterprises. And I'm always so respectful of Charles and of Tina, Nancy, and remembering Frank Jr. So Charlie loved the idea, talked to the family, and here we are with a hit show. Thanks to you, John, and Margo. Appreciate you having the insight and the foresight for this. And then Charlie is with us, and Charlie said, I'm in New York. I said, well, why don't you come in and meet the boss, John Katsimatidis. Look at Charlie showed up in studio live, and he beat me to the punch, John. So meet Charles Pignon.
Joe, I love you.
You've been a New Yorker originally.
Yeah, I grew up in New York.
And you left New York 30 years ago, but don't you miss New York?
I do, in a certain way. I went to Siena College. I was in upstate New York. And then when I graduated from college, I started working with Frank full-time. I actually started in 84, my first year in college. And in the summer months, I would travel with him to Vegas or Atlantic City, wherever he was working. And then in 88, they said, why don't you come on full-time? And then it was much easier for me to be out in California. I'm Italian. Most of my family's in upstate New York. I'm the one that left. I do miss it. I don't miss the snow, but I do miss the vibrancy. And, you know, L.A. is really laid back and different. I do miss New York. And when I hear that song, I actually was almost in tears last night. I came in for the Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga concerts, and Lady Gaga's people had called us and said, can we borrow the arrangement of New York, New York? There's no other that Don Costa chart. Because that's what she said. I don't want to just introduce Tony Bennett by saying the legendary Tony Bennett. I want to sing a song that Tony represents New York so much. And she sang Tony, New York, New York, before Tony came out. And it was wonderful. And for me to hear that, it brought back such memories of the last time Frank was here was in 1994 at Radio City Music Hall. And I kind of knew that was the last time he'd be in New York, because we would get the tour schedules. And there were really no dates being booked for 1995. We went to Japan at the end of December. He opened a baseball stadium in Fukuoka, Japan, for 2 nights. And then after that show, I remember he said to all the guys, that's it, I've got to stop. But next year I'll do one benefit. Children's Center. He built a hospital for abused children in Palm Springs. He did that, and that was it. So it was kind of bittersweet. But to hear that music and those charts and what you guys do in playing it, you don't know how I feel.
Well, I get tears in my eyes every time, Joe comes on Sunday nights and plays that music. And you sit back, you relax, have a glass of wine, and just enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, I am so lucky. Joe gives me a lot more credit than I deserve. I'm working with the Tiffany Diamond. There's nothing I have to do, except every couple of years we have to polish it so people can see it shine and sparkle. And what you guys are doing is exposing people, because I do believe when people of a certain age hear Frank's music, they gravitate to it. But if they don't hear it, they're never going to know about it. Things are so fast-paced. And there's something about Frank Sinatra that separates him from any other singer. It's just like a voice that compels you to listen. It's not background music. Whenever I hear Frank, or you hear Frank walk, I was just on the street the other day walking around by where that soup Nazi guy is, and they had a boombox playing Summer Wind. And I told you, I was almost in tears that people are still listening to that music, and that shows you Frank's legacy is still alive.
You know what it was? You know what I say to people? It's not only that Frank Sinatra had a great voice. It's the selection of the songs he decided to do.
Yeah.
And that made a difference in his life, and that made a difference in success.
Yeah, and what he sang, he picked and he believed in. I remember, I might have told Joe this, that when we were on tour in the early 90s, when the first war started, the Gulf War, I remember him saying to his librarian, let's bring out The House I Live In. I want to sing it for the troops and their family. And he would sing The House I Live In. At that age, 76, at the end of that song, he'd be weeping. He'd say to the audience, excuse me, but I'm so moved by that song. I don't know, you know, we always say, what would Frank do if he was here now? I don't know what Frank would think with all this pandemic, but I can tell you that we need his voice more now than ever.
You know, Joe Piscopo, as the weeks go by, he's starting to look a little bit like Frank.
Well, he
especially that hat he wears.
Yeah. Did he ever tell you? I think one of the first times I met Joe. I mean, I certainly know Joe because to me he's a legend with Saturday Night Live. But does Joe mention that he dressed up as Frank and Frank did a favor for Dionne Warwick and did a solid gold show? I went with Frank's accompanist Bill Miller, and Frank did two songs. But he introduced Joe in Joe's getup. Joe, you have that, right? Or did you have that clip?
I do, and we talked about it last week on Sundays Sinatra. Ramsey Munns does Sundays with Sinatra, as a matter of fact, Charlie. Hey, Charles, you know what? I was scared out of my mind.
I don't even think
I was 30 years old. I got the invite, and John, when Mr. S invited you to something, or there was an event, it was just like, it was a show up, here it is, and you never, ever questioned it. You just showed up. And I showed up. I'm at a sound stage in Los Angeles. Charles, you were there, and it's Dionne Warwick, Mr. S doing a favor for his friend Dionne Warwick, and I go, I wear the makeup, right? Yes, Mr. S wants you to wear the makeup. And again, I said, I wear the makeup, right? I said, man, he wanted me dressed as him.
Yeah.
And I shook his hand as him, and then we took pictures afterwards. Charlie, we took pictures afterwards
with
Dionne.
I had no idea you were going to be there because she had come up to see him at the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas and asked him, saying, I got this new show, and I think they wanted to get it renewed another year. And he owed her a favor. She did a benefit with him, I think, on an aircraft carrier here for AIDS in the early 80s. And so, you know, Frank, if you did a favor for him, he'd reciprocate. So I was surprised when you were there, Joe, but he loved it.
You know, I tell you, it was an honor, and it was great, and he was always so nice. And I met him, you know, as the listeners of Sundays with Sinatra on WABC know, is when I met him, he was in makeup. I knocked on the door gingerly, carefully, and he was in that members-only jacket, leaned back with his boots on, and, you know, his elbow on the arm of the chair looking so Frank Sinatra. And Charlie, what amazes me about Charles John Katzmatidis is how to keep your cool around Frank Sinatra. See, now, because I would always go gaga and wasn't able to say anything. But Charlie, I got to tell you, John was with Mr. Sinatra in Greece. Were you on that trip, Charlie?
I don't know. I've been asking him.
No, I was not.
I was at the Athens trip.
Yeah, I have a video of that.
I took Robbie Marks with me.
Yeah, I was not on that trip.
Well, that was an interesting trip. Over dinner, I'm going to tell you some interesting things that happened on
that
trip.
We found the clip with Frank Sinatra and Joe Piscopo.
Let's
take a listen. Yeah.
I have discovered a young man whom I think is going to be a rock and roll superstar. He's got good stage presence, great set of pipes. He's Italian. And he has a unique way with a phrase. But more than that, there's just something I like about the guy. You see what I think. You'll know what I think. Here he is singing a medley of rock and roll classics. Here's my new discovery, Joe Piscopo.
It's incredible. Joe, how does that make you feel?
You're so kind. You're marvelous.
You know, you get goosebumps when you hear that music.
The music.
When you hear that music, I still get goosebumps, and I love it. It's part of, you know, Frank Sinatra made you feel alive.
Yes.
It made you feel like you want to go out and celebrate. Now, we have to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to come back with more of Joe Piscopo and more of Sinatra and more of Charles Pignoli.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long we sang a song, and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
W770 ABC.
Fly me to the moon, let me play
among the stars and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my
doesn't that music make you glad you're alive?
In other words,
you're talking, I'm biased. Yeah. So, yes, everything you say, I'm going to say yes to.
Well, no,
because I love the man and I love the music.
I remember times when Resorts International opened up, 1977, 78.
Yeah.
And he'd be in the dining room eating, and I'd have the table next to him. And he was always, the heads turned.
Yes.
When Frank Sinatra walked into the room.
You're absolutely right.
We only have Joe Piscopo.
Joe.
But the head still turned, Joe, for you.
Joe, I got to tell you, if Frank were alive, you know, Frank was so punctual. With Frank, if you weren't early, you were late. He'd strangle you, Joe, if you weren't here on time. My wife hates me because I'm always early, and she's like, get that Sinatra out of your mind. I saw planes leave. I saw car. He left his wife once. Talking.
What?
When
what?
Frank said what? Wheels up, wheels went up. It didn't matter who you were. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine when she got back to Palm Springs, however she got back there, how that went. But yeah, Frank was a stickler for time. He just, I think probably from his big band days, because they would do a concert and then get back on that bus and then have to do a bunch of shows.
What's the greatest story you could tell about Frank?
The greatest story that still moves me that I can tell about Frank is I think it was 1991 and he was working in Las Vegas and I was talking to him during a break and I said to him, I've never seen you sing Young at Heart and I think that's appropriate now. I think he was 76. So he said, well, call Terry Woodson, the music librarian, and get it up here and we'll do it. So they didn't have time to rehearse it and the second show the music came and he did it and he lost his way through the lyrics, and the audience started singing with him. And it was about three songs before the end of the show. And the show ended, and I'm standing backstage with his production manager, Hank Cattaneo, and he comes walking at me. Now, I'm shaking my boots because, like, I recommended this song, and he got lost in it. And he stood there for which probably was 2 seconds, which seemed to me to be an hour, and looked at me, and I croaked out, the audience, they loved Young at Heart. And he looked at me. I said, it meant a lot to them. And he grabbed my arm and he said, it meant a lot to them. Do you know what these songs mean to me? So I always took away from there that the songs were his best friend. When everybody else deserted him, he had that music. And that's why it touches you. That's why it touches me. Because he just didn't sing things.
Now, we have a situation that happened at that dinner in Athens, and you may be the only one that knows the answer.
Okay.
Margo, tell the story. We were at the dinner. God. There was about 20 of us. The prime minister refused to go to dinner, so he sent his daughter.
Okay.
So his daughter came and took about 20 of us out to dinner along with Frank. And we go to dinner on top of that mountain overlooking
the Acropolis, that. It was beautiful.
And Margo goes over and to say hello. And tell us what happened.
Mr. Sinatra grabbed me, held my arm, tears came out of his eyes, and said, you remind me of the only woman I ever loved in my life.
God. Wow.
That really happened.
And
that's why we're looking for the pictures from that night.
I didn't know what. That's before iPhones and all that.
Yeah.
And he actually, the tears are rolling out of his eyes. And I was like, I felt so, I don't know. Anyway, it was a great moment.
Well, yeah, so, those are something you'll never forget.
So, Joe, did we ever figure out who he's talking about?
Charles, who do you think?
Charles, what do you think? Exactly. That's what I was going to go. I'm afraid to even make a guess.
Ava was the love of his life, but I really think the love of his life was his first wife, Nancy, because Nancy married him before he was Frank Sinatra, and she stayed with him, and they stayed friends till the end. She passed away a couple of years ago at 102. I would go up to her house every week up until the end. We'd have pepper and egg sandwiches. She never spoke ill of Frank. She loved him. They loved each other. Like I said, when he was not Frank Sinatra, she believed in his dream, and he always he knew he had that to fall back on. That's why I think even when he had the down periods, he was able to come back, because she always was in his corner.
By the way, I offered in Athens, I've offered a $10,000 reward for whoever found those pictures.
Oh, and well, I might have a video if they show the audience. Are you guys in the first row?
Yes, we're in the first row.
We were both definitely in the first row.
Okay.
And that
dinner,
was some.
The
that,
dinner. Is
I'll
where
tell
we
you,
want
though,
the photographs.
They sent a whole motorcade. And we must have had 100 motorcycles in
it
the motorcade.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I can ask. You know who might know is Elliot Weissman. He probably was at the dinner. Frank's promoter.
Yeah,
was he there at the time?
Yeah.
So maybe.
There's a way we can track it down.
I even went to the prime minister's daughter, Dora Bakoyannis, and said to her, you got to find him.
Oh, you find the photographer. So you've never seen a hard copy of that?
I've never seen them.
Oh, wow.
But they do exist somewhere.
Somewhere.
Okay. I'll check for you.
How do you say somewhere?
Somewhere.
Well, okay. Charles, Charlie Pignoli, Tony, Frank Sinatra, and
Joe
Piscopo, thank you for
Governor
the memories.
Lydia.
Thank you for everything that you do.
There you go.
If you're young,
get hot.
Beautiful music. Beautiful.
There it
makes
is.
You glad
there
you're alive.
Go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams.
Well, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
And look forward to dinner. Yeah. And Margo, thank you.
Beautiful. Beautiful evening.
Lydia, have a great weekend. Governor Patterson, have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And God bless New York, God bless America, and God bless our memories.
To be young at heart. For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart.